Recording this on the road for once because my schedule has got that busy. Truthfully, it's becoming a potential concern with the idea that it may seriously impinge on my ability to be the parent that I want. I don't know. From being as happy and content as I've ever been in my life 6 months ago, I'm getting back to where I was a few years ago, where I was really struggling just to keep it together. Now that's simply not acceptable, because it's not just about me anymore. It's about my child, and I have to be there mentally for her. It's my unconventional life. Oof. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way, it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? Finished reading Modern Romance this week. Okay, I'm going to offend some people here, so I need to couch this carefully. Monogamy is wrong. Okay, I didn't mean that. That's misleading. Maybe lifelong monogamy is a highly unfeasible concept that brings more heartache and emotional suffering than perhaps anything else on this earth. There, I said it. Now, I do know examples of couples that it's worked for, but in my experience, they are the vast exception to the rule, if you talk long term. But to play devil's advocate, maybe that is just a confirmation bias given my experience. In the book, Aziz Ansari talks about how Dan Savage, who is a unconventional LGBTQ-friendly author, journalist, and podcaster, explains how for thousands of years it was acceptable for men to be non-monogamous, while women were supposed to be chaste and exclusive. Then, with the women's movement of the last century, women finally got the power to say that they wouldn't stand for that inequality anymore. But instead of men saying, okay, we've had our way for thousands of years, it's about time you should too, they instead let themselves be moved by fear and jealousy, and said now, out of obligation, okay, we'll be monogamous now too. An expectation that neither sex are either hardwired to meet, or hence largely able to respect. There was a section in the book too about non-monogamous relationships, although not in any great detail, and the ones it did describe mentioned all these other expectations and contracts about what you can do or experience with other people, which just made no sense to me, unless these things naturally match up for both people involved. Trying to tell someone else how to act, how to love, trying to control someone else, never works. And the one thing that Eri said to me before that I really liked and made me think that we were a good match before all this emotional turmoil since she's got pregnant was that there were no rules in our relationship. And that's no longer the case. Although again, to play devil's advocate, she did say that that hasn't changed and that it is my choice to do what I want. But do I really have a choice? I wonder why, as a species, we want to control people. It's because we're afraid of losing them. But it never works out, does it? Because you can't force love. You have to let it come and go freely. You have to let people be themselves. It's only through truly being free that you can find peace and happiness in the world. In the book, Ansari also quotes the rapper Pitbull, which of course meant nothing to me, but the quote has value. He said, "People are so stuck on what's right or wrong. But what's right to you might be wrong to me. What counts is everybody being happy. And boy, is that far from the case a lot of the time now. It seems like a lot of times in my life, I know what the problem is, but I'm just unwilling to make myself seem like a bad guy to fix it. I think part of it is that we extensively negotiated our parenting partnership to make sure we were good fits in that regard. We didn't talk about our romantic relationship at all. Largely because it just developed over time without any agreement. Perhaps because I never really wanted a monogamous romantic relationship in the first place, so that was the only way one could develop. I don't know. But I've started reading Opening Up now, the seminal work on creating functioning non-monogamous relationships. Not because I'm thinking of opening up our relationship anytime soon, because one of the first things it says in the book is that if you have any problems in the relationship already, opening up a relationship will almost always destroy it. But even from a place of trust and security in a functioning relationship, it goes into extensive details about how to structure a non-monogamous relationship in terms of agreements and boundaries and consent and expectations and, oh my God, why are human relationships so hard to navigate? We have to be doing something wrong, no? I talked to my sister this week and she was really helpful actually. She suggested that a lot of what I'm struggling with right now is going from a situation where I was specifically trying to control the way that I had a child to where I now seemingly have no control. So of course, I'm going to freak out. I do feel largely powerless. And the conversation with my sister actually stemmed from an incident this week where Eri and I went to see our OBGYN again. Now, Eri has been adamant from day one that she wanted to have a natural water birth. I didn't know that much about it, but she was a nurse with a lot of experience in the maternity unit, so I figured she knew best and assumed she wouldn't do anything that was dangerous for the baby. But then when we saw the OBGYN this week and she told him that she was going to have a water birth, he immediately told us that he couldn't see us anymore and we'd have to find another OBGYN because for him it was too much of a liability and he'd seen too many babies come into the hospital after attempted natural births. He told us that there was a study done recently by a highly respected university that reported that it's 20 times more likely to have a dead baby delivering outside a hospital. But Eri seemed totally unfazed by this denouncement. She seemed to think that the doctor had no justifiable cause to express any concern and that she in fact had fully expected him to say something like that. And I had no idea the medical community over here was so adamantly against the procedure and, to be honest, felt totally blindsided. But I also knew there was no way I was going to change Eri's mind. She said that you shouldn't listen to everything a doctor says, that it's important to get other opinions. And, you know, to be honest, when I think back to my experience with other doctors, it does back up that notion. But I just had a huge anxiety attack, made worse by the fact that I was fearful, once again, to express my emotions, so kept them inside. This is really becoming a huge struggle for me. Anyway, afterwards we went to a natural birthing center, which at first only exacerbated my concerns. It looked like a cheap day spa with calming music being played and two main rooms with a bed and a bath in each. And it cost $7,500, which is nothing to sniff at and of course isn't covered by insurance. But we got to talk to a midwife there who, unlike the doctor, really took her time to answer our questions. She said the study the doctor was quoting had been refuted by some people, as the study had considered a baby kept alive in an incubator with brain damage but no quality of life an alive baby. But also she talked about how doctors are of course in bed with the insurance companies and want you to go to a hospital that will charge $65,000 versus a birthing center that will charge a tenth of that. Of course, like with most things, the truth is likely somewhere in the middle. But talking to other people, it does seem like a water birth isn't as dreadful an idea as he first made it sound. I just don't know what to think. As I said, with each passing week, I seem to be losing a grip on who I am and my sanity in general. Perhaps I'm being a little melodramatic. Who knows? Well, how do you like that for a positive advertisement for having kids? But to be fair, I didn't stick to a few of the things that I really had wanted in my parenting partnership, so Perhaps I'm suffering the consequences of that now. God, please give me strength. One thing I probably do need to say is that with all this doom and gloom and the sky falling down type naysaying, I do still feel love and compassion and a desire to take care of Eri. Perhaps, as she sometimes says, this is building a connection between us, going through this awkward, difficult time period and having these very difficult, trying conversations, and that we may even look back on it in the future and sometimes laugh. And furthermore, it could be a great lesson for me in terms of handling my emotions. I don't know. It does also feel like if I haven't learnt it after over 20 years, maybe it's something I'm just not able to learn. I think I might go to church this week. I'll see you next week. That's another week gone. What have I learnt? And what peace have I found? Cheers for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Drop me a line at myunconventionallife2016@gmail.com if you have comments or questions. And if you like the show and know someone else who might get something out of it, tell a friend. I will be back next week with a week's worth of thoughts and emotions and hopefully some joy. But until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, try to be kind to others, but as much to yourself. We're all fighting our own battle. Lead with love. Hello.